I was talking to a friend of mine who loves your work. And he was like, man, it's going to look bad. Two pastors who quit their work and now talking about the church program. I think that we have this band-aid kind of solution to this big disease we're facing. And and that's what you said. We're just dealing with the cosmetics. I think that's very real. And we have this idea that, oh, if we change the program. Mm-hmm. We used to have this when I was a pastor in Jakarta. And the whole idea was, oh, let's shift this, the divine service first and the Sabbath school next. Because mm-hmm. most people are not attending Sabbath school, but they come divine service. Mm-hmm. So if we shift it, you know, and so we put the divine service first and the Sabbath school at the end and all that. We have this idea that if we change programs or if we have a better program, mm-hmm. you know, it would give a solution. Yeah. But we need to go deeper than that, or else we're just going to be another cycle. Mm-hmm. It's just we're actually in a cycle. And I think I was talking to some of my friends who works here in the division. Some of the solutions that some of our leaders have is just a friend of mine who was talking to, I might get in trouble, but a friend of mine was talking to one of the leaders and he was like, oh, we're losing a lot of young people in our churches. You know, our kids are no longer going to church and all that. And then one of my friends who's working here, he's like, so what do we do? And he's like, we need a nationwide crusade that would involve these young people. In my mind, yeah, I literally choked. And in my mind, I was like, what are we doing?
You're like, I just threw up a little.
Yeah, so I'm like, man, and, you know, so are we just going to be in a cycle? And I'm like, there's at some point we need to challenge the culture.
Yeah.
Or else our kids are going to end up thinking the same thing as us. The church is just merely programmed. So yeah. I went into this, man, thinking, you know, I'm going to get in trouble. But dude, who's going to, what about my friends?
Yeah.
Who, I tell you, man, the people may not be able to articulate the same thing as you articulate the way church should look like. But deep inside their heart, they know this.
Mm.
So when I post about this or you post about things about the culture and the way we challenge the church, you see thousands of shares. So it's either these people are just being rebellious or they can resonate to what we are actually trying to say.
Yeah.
And so who, until, okay, I think a classic example that I'm talking to one of my friends who works here at the church is look, in the Philippines, we're so content. If you haven't traveled outside the Philippines, you're probably just content with potholes sometimes. So with the roads, they're like, oh, the road is nice. Sometimes there's potholes. Sometimes it's not so smooth. And then if you're given an opportunity to go to Singapore, where their roads are literally converted to F1 roads at night, you'll see, man, this is what roads look like. Amazing. And most of the time, Filipinos, I realize, don't complain as much to the Filipino political system, and they're so contented by it because they grow up thinking that's okay.
Mm.
But if you look at the world around you outside, you see, wow, roads could be like that. Internet could be that fast. And you can't complain.
Yeah.
And I've realized that we are so stuck in our bubble thinking that because we're used to this, and we're just going to just go with the flow and thinking everything is just okay and fine.
Mm.
But I've realized, bro, I've realized during COVID that church could be better.
Mm.
And not better, could be the mystery that Paul is talking about.
Yeah.
That could be an impact. When I went to the jungle school, I tell you, we can build schools like this, where kids can be prevented from early marriages. Yeah. And that could be a church. Mm. That could be our goal to bring kids to safety. And I'm like, man, this, so it's more than just a Sabbath school. So I went in, bro, I tell you, and I will tell you a little story about this. Sorry, if we're talking too much. I apologize, guys.
No, bro, talk. But,
and I realized I went in, bro. So what happened was COVID. And I'm like, man, what can we do? Church is closed. I was in California. I was with my friends. And there's a ministry called Fusion. I don't know if you've seen this on my Instagram. And the church is closed. And I'm like, we can't bring people to church. And this is my whole idea. Bro, I was raised a theologian with a concept of we bring people to church. Mm. That's my whole thing. We do events, we do meetings. The whole concept is bring people to church. Populate this church with people that are unbelievers. But we couldn't do that anymore. I was an evangelist. And for years, I've been traveling to Romania, to all these places, preaching the word. And that was my whole concept of church. And so my friend came up and said, yo, we can't bring people to church. We can't do all these evangelist campaign and all that. And it was like, oh, but there's a lot of people in San Bernardino. One of the biggest homeless, you know, the population in America. And it's like, there's a lot of homeless people. We can't bring people to church, but we definitely can bring church to the people. And you talked about this. In fact, that's the next chapter. Yeah. So you can pause this and we go there directly. But but the whole concept was we bring people to church. And bro, we don't know what we're doing at all. I never went to your school for seminars or anything. But deep inside my heart, I was like, man, there's more than just sitting down at church. And so we went there, and every single day, bro, we brought Burger King. We brought like Impossible Burger to those judgmental vegetarians out there. It's vegetarian. Taco Bell. All these. We brought them to the homeless community. And every single day, without an agenda, we'll just sit down there every single day with people, knowing their names, listening to them. Just if they need help, we would invest on them. We actually ask people from Loma Linda to, hey, can you help us make a resumes for these people? We would put them on hotel rooms. It's a gamble. Sometimes people will not react to your help. Sometimes they do drugs in the hotel rooms. But that's just it. You just have to invest in people. And sometimes there's success rates. And I tell you, man, for the past 7 months, we would do this every single day for about 4 hours, just talking to people every single day. And one of my homeless friends, Shaggy, says, you know, you guys are different. Every day people come up here and give us food. But none of us would ask us our names. And you know what I realized, bro, during this time? You know what's important than people knowing your church's name? Is when our church knows people's names. That was so vital for me because I realized I was never doing that. And so I would eat with people every single day. And they're like, man, you see us. You actually talk to us without an agenda, bro. And during that time, we probably have about 29 homeless people baptized in the past 7 months. Wow. We never asked them for a Bible study. They were like, yo, whatever you believe, can you tell us? And we have people giving them Bible studies in the streets because they feel safe. And we've sent people back to their homes, to their families. We've GoFunded a family to start up something. And I was like, man, this is what church is. I was like, oh, we're literally at least affecting a bad statistics of people being homeless.
Yeah.
And I was so excited, bro. I was so excited. After COVID, I went back to the Philippines. I applied the same concept of salvation found in circles, not just church pews, you know?
Yeah.
And that concept of, look, salvation is here too. It's not just in the church, in the building. I tried to apply it, bro. I tried to apply it in my hometown where, since the churches are closed, I said to the kids, there's a lot of kids up in my community. I said, hey, come to the house, you know? I brought PlayStation. Sorry, guys. So I said, you can play, but if you answer your assignments, you know, then we'll give you some time to play there. Because I'd rather have these kids play out with me inside the house than you've been doing drugs outside, you know, or the rates of premarital sex so big, the premarital childbirth. Anyways, the church my house became a church, bro. And this is, I don't know what I was doing. But again, salvation is found in circles, not in church pews. We started to just congregate with these kids, and we know their names. When they have dental problems, we fix it. We have problems with their health. We're just a community.
Yeah.
And we started to have growth in our church. We have improved about 70% of our church during COVID because of this.
Yeah.
And as soon as these kids arrive at church, let me tell you what happened. The elders were like, well, they can't be wearing pants. Oh, they can't be wearing that. Oh, they can't. And I was like, man, what is happening? You know, all these kids. And these kids just started to go back. Just, yeah. This is not sustainable. And this is what I saw what you're saying. I was like, man, the system's just rigged for us not to grow. You know, so what should we do?
Yeah.
I offered the same thing doing church plant in another city. And again, I realized that it's all just program based.
Yeah.
So, people, 300 young people come every Sabbath. I was like, wow, it's amazing. And as soon as I left, bro, you know what happened? It's almost nothing there anymore.
Yep.
Because everyone now is dependent on me as a speaker.
Yep.
So we're just superficially doing these things. And this is where, you know, I guess what I'm saying is from that shift of homeless ministry, that has caused me to really radically change the way I view church. And then I listened to your podcast. I was like, man, this is crazy. That's what I've been resonating with. And then I applied it to a local church and said, man, because they messaged me and said, oh, young people are dying. I guess this is where my point is before I lose everything. Because I went throughout all these stories, but they were saying, oh, the young people are you know, dying. And I said, oh, it's because of these programs and all these things. And so I asked them, if you help us borrow if you let us borrow the meeting hall downstairs, and we'll fill it with young people. And so we start endorsing it social media, and people come every single Sabbath. For Sabbath, about 200 young people come. They attend. But I realized, bro, it was all because there's a speaker. It was not a culture. It was not heartbeat. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
I realized I was just fixing the cosmetics. I was changing the whole program. Now it's not like this. And as soon as I left, I realized it's all gone.
Yeah. Oh.
So what I'm trying to say is, what are we really touching? Are we just changing the whole superficial thing that we do at church? We're shifting a program, or we bring another speaker, or are we really touching the deeper side of things? And this is why I planted a church here where I lived, where I try to decline all these things that I've been doing. Because I tell you, bro, I could automatically just do a social media kind of cult thing where I just, hey, come to my church. And I promise you, I fill it up. I definitely fill it up with just Instagram followers. But is that really what we're trying to do?
That's been my challenge, bro. Because, you know, one of my dreams for a long time, even today, my dream is to do ministry full time. And that's actually, I didn't transition from church employment to leave ministry. I transitioned from church employment to do more ministry. And I had a conversation with my leaders here, and they were very supportive of it, because they realized, like, Marcus, you've got gifts and talents that are very unique, and you could do a lot more with them as independently as opposed to as an employee, you know? And so my transition out of church employment was to do more mission, particularly secular post-church mission, rather than less. And here's the thing. It's very, very difficult, because obviously when you transition out of church employment, you got to find a way to replace that income, right? And I know in my mind, I know if I have a social media cult following, like celebrity following, like a lot of preachers do, where they plant a conventional church and they preach every weekend in front of crowds and they have a million followers on Instagram. When they publish a book, they'll sell a million copies like that, right? It's a great business model. But the reason why I refuse to do that, even though financially it would work so well, the reason why I refuse to do that is because I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that is the very culture that God is calling me to step out of and away from. Because here's the thing, and you're right, when you have a program culture or a celebrity preacher culture, first of all, it's unsustainable. You have to maintain that level of spectator impressiveness, that attractiveness. You have to maintain that week after week. Now, here's the thing. Some churches can pull it off. I'm not going to say that no church can pull it off. Some churches can pull it off. For example, here in my city, there's a few Pentecostal churches that pull off a great weekend event all the time. There's a difference, though. They actually hire staff to put on those programs. As Adventists, we depend on volunteers. So what happens when you have busy people in your church,
yep,
who are now volunteering, mm-hmm, to run your program that they put on every weekend after weekend, right?
Bro.
What time do they have left for missional living? They don't really have any time left, right? And so if you have paid staff, like, You get paid to run that weekend event and you've got a whole team that's like, that's their only job. That's their job, right? They can do that and they still have personal time to go do mission. But when you have people who have their jobs, their life, their careers, their school, and then they have to volunteer to run this program week after week, and then you want them to start a small group? You know what I mean? Like, you want them to do mission. You want them to do evangelism. You want them to give Bible studies. Where are they going to get the time from? So, and here's the challenge that I found is that when you run these programs, this is the challenge for me here in Australia, post church city, right? Nobody in Australia, no secular person in Australia. I have a lot of secular friends here. None of them lay awake at night wondering, is there a church in town that has a good program? None. Right. I left church because I didn't like church. And I wonder if there's one around town that's better than the one I grew up in. That's a de-churched issue. And churches like Hillsong, you know, very, very sort of high production, entertaining, engaging, attractional, really appeal to that de-churched audience. But there isn't a single secular person, even secular people with existential and spiritual anxiety. They're looking for answers. None of them are looking for a program. They're not sitting there like, let me go Google and see if there's a contemporary worship church somewhere in my town. They don't care. They're not looking for it. It would be like you, anyone listening to this podcast, and maybe there might be an exception, but can you imagine yourself laying awake at night wondering, I wonder if there's a good, you know, if there's like a Sikh temple that has a good program on this weekend, I'd like to go. Like, you're never going to think that unless maybe you grew up in that culture, right? Like, outside of that, you're never going to think that. And that's how secular people are today. They're so far removed from church. They're so unchurched, right? They're like, they've never been to church. Their parents never went to church. Their grandparents went for Christmas. Like, we're talking generations of church detachment, to the point that your typical secular Australian, church is not a part of their social imagination. They don't know what it is. And I can tell story after story of that. You know, I worked with a doctor some years ago. I've shared this story before. I told him I was a pastor and he just looked me in the eye. He's like, what's that? In fact, I think it was like last year, I had a tow truck guy come pick up my car on the freeway, take it because it ran out of petrol. So he took me to a petrol station. So tow truck guy shows up and, you know, I'm riding in the tow truck with him. He's like, oh, so what do you do for a living? I'm like, oh, I'm a pastor. And he couldn't even pronounce it. He's like, can you say that again? I was like, I'm a pastor. He's like, what is that? You know? So like, there's just no, they don't know what a chaplain is. They don't know what a denomination is. You tell them Methodist, Pentecostal, they look at you like, what the heck are you talking about? So far removed. So here's the thing. If the people that surround us are completely detached from any semblance of Christian culture or imagination or church imagination, and they're not looking for a program, and we put all of our energy and talent into running a weekend program, who's it for? I mean, look, let's be honest. God didn't ask for one. You don't see anywhere in the New Testament where God is like, I want you to gather every weekend and do this blueprint. Here's the blueprint. I want you to do this every weekend, right? God didn't ask for it. The people who are lost in our city aren't looking for it. So who's the program for, bro?
I have a question.
Yep.
But Jesus went to synagogue as his custom was. Let's just
answer my question first, and then I'll answer yours. So, like, who's the program for? Right? It's for us. That's who it's for. It's for people who are already saved. And I had this conversation with someone some years ago. I was like, how many sermons have you heard? I actually posted this on social media the other day as well. Like, how many sermons have you heard in your lifetime? If you've been in church your whole life and you're in your 30s like me, it's likely you've heard at least 1,000 sermons. Okay. How many people have you reached for Jesus? The standard answer across the board, zero. It's like, how many more sermons do you need? You know, how many more programs do you need to attend before you decide, I'm going to go love somebody and share the gospel?
It's so detached, bro. I tell you, it's like, someone said that the church is like a selling book, a Chinese book that is written in German, and they sold it in Mexico. we're just so detached. And we've been doing the same thing. It's just, you know, we're offering something here to a group, you know, that don't even speak the language.
That's right. And this is where I think this conversation really comes to in terms of its relevance, because some people will say, and it's like you mentioned earlier, some people will say, oh, you guys are tearing down the church. You're being divisive, right? I don't know, man. Like, if my loved one is ill, I want them to get better. You know what I mean? Like, if I don't love you and you're ill, say you have a disease and I don't love you, then I'm indifferent. Your hair is falling out and, you know, you're going blind and your limbs are turning green and I'm just indifferent to it. I'm just like, don't really care. But like, if I love you, I'm going to be like, Jasper, man, you know, we got to get this taken care of, bro. Let's figure it out. You know, and so when people say, oh, you're being divisive, you're tearing the church down, it's like, wait a minute, time out, man. If I didn't love the church, I would say nothing, right? If I didn't love the church, if I didn't believe with all my heart that the Seventh-day Adventist movement has something to say to the world that nobody else is saying, I would just shut up. I'd go get a job somewhere else, make way more money, right? But it's because I love the church. It's because I love our message. I love our movement. I believe that we have something to say that nobody else is saying. I believe we have a message that's radical and relevant and necessary for our generation. And I see our church is dead. And I can't say nothing, man. You know, like, love compels me to say something. Now, of course, I could be toxic about it and just like complain and point fingers. It's not what I'm doing. I'm saying, here are the challenges. And now let's go to scripture. What does scripture tell us? And now let's find some practical solutions. Here's some practical solutions. Let's try this. Step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And very similar to you. That's why I planted a church here in Western Australia. I planted a church. I don't actually call it a church. We call it the R3 Network, because when people hear the word church, they automatically think a building with a program. So we call it the R3 Network because it's actually a series of small missional community circles, as you call them, who live missionally. There's no program, there's no building, there's no pew, there's no lectern. We live missionally in groups. And yes, we pray, we worship, we center ourselves on the word. We do all those things, but it's not a Eurocentric program in a outdated building, right? It's living rooms, it's parks, it's cafes, it's wherever the Spirit leads us. And it's been incredible because we've been doing this for 3 years. And of course, one of those years was the COVID lockdown years, which were pretty tough for everybody. But even with that, we started out with one group of 12 people. That initial group multiplied. We now have two separate groups, and we've had another two groups join us. One of the groups that joined us is getting ready to multiply. The other one has a Bible study midweek that got so big, they had to multiply it into three separate Bible studies. People who are unchurched, people who are secular. We're in a secular city, man. We're in Perth, you know? Our churches are struggling. Our churches aren't reaching people. Most young people are embarrassed to invite their friend to church. They don't want to invite them. because it's like, I'm barely surviving this, dude. I ain't going to bring my friend here, you know? So I'm seeing, and the beautiful thing about what's happening in the R3 network with the lives that we're touching, with the people who are getting to know Jesus, with the way that we're growing, is that there's no program. I'm not preaching every weekend. No one's depending on me to share the gospel. We've got one guy who is discipling a friend of his that he works with, who joined our church. He's been in church. He's one of the one of the oldest guys in our group. He's been in church for a long time. And one of the things he said when he first joined our group was, man, I'm just tired of sitting around and doing nothing. You know, I'm just tired of like going to church and sit on the pew and go home and like week after week, year after year. And for the first time in his life, he's literally leading someone to Jesus. And he was scared when he first joined. He's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to answer questions. I don't know this. I don't know that. We just taught him the basics of discipleship, and he started living it out very, very simply. Now a friend of his, you know, he's messaging me every day. Oh, he's reading the Bible. He's asking Bible questions. Friend of his who's secular, hasn't been to church before. They just work together. And all he did, you know what he did? For like 2 years, he would just go with his friend and they would swim together and run together. And just became really good friends. He never pushed anything religious. Nothing, you know, it's just like really getting to know him, really intimacy, you know, that intimacy. And then he started inviting his friend to some of our social hangouts, and his friend got to know us and he liked us. You know, he realized, oh, they don't cut the chickens' heads off. They're normal people, you know, and we became, you know, all became good friends. And now some of the other people in the group going, they train together. And, you know, he just sent me a message this morning. There was a group of them having breakfast this morning, you know, but through that journey, he became interested in religion and the Bible. He'd never really explored it before. He started reading the Bible. And of course, now that he's reading the Bible, he doesn't know what he's reading. Who's he going to ask? He's going to ask his friend who he's been hanging out with for 2 years, who brought him to the social with the other churchy people. You know what I mean? Like, and it's like he's leading someone to Jesus, and he's not a preacher. He's not a Bible scholar. He can't answer every question, but he's learned how to do life with someone. And it's something anyone can do this. And that's the most exciting thing about this church plant, is like full missional engagement. Like everyone's engaged, man. And I'm not saying we're perfect. We're like every day, we're like, issues. How do we learn from this? How do we adapt? How do we grow? The early church, the New Testament church, Paul writing all these letters because they were all ate up, right? Like they were doing terrible things sometimes, you know, but there's this simplicity. There's this primitive godliness, bro, of like everyone connected, everyone engaged. There isn't a program. There isn't a building. I don't have to preach every weekend. I don't have to roster things. I don't have to plan things. You know, we just show up and do life together. And the other beautiful thing about it is that it's not even about the weekend. Like when we gather on Sabbath, that is not the center of what it means to be a missional community. The Sabbath gathering is just a small part of what we've been doing all week long, man. Like this is like, that we are the church. We don't go to church, right? We don't attend church. We are the church. This is our identity. We live this out through radical obedience every day. And I believe 100% that this is how you reach a secular society. This is how you reach a secular, because what do you have? You have these small circles of relational intimacy that grow and multiply. And where are they? They're not hiding in some sacred building off in a corner somewhere that no one wants to attend. They're in the cafes. They're in the neighborhood. They're in the park. They're at the concert, right? They're at the barbecue where the people are. And this is, you know, I mean, it's just incredible, man. Like, I absolutely love it. Like, I literally could never, ever, ever go back to pastoring conventional churches. I could never go back because I've seen what God is doing here. And I'm like, this is it, man. Like, I want to be a part of this. And so just to kind of jump, because I don't think we've even jumped into chapter two yet, but just to jump into chapter two real quick, this is the whole premise of chapter two. The church is not a building.
Hey everyone, it is Pastor Marcus here with a quick announcement / interruption. I know you're really enjoying the episode, but I've got some things that I want to share with you before we return to our conversation. The first one is, if you are listening to this podcast series and you're thinking to yourself, I really want to be part of the change in the church, then the good news is there's a way to do that, guys. There's a way to actually step in, get equipped, get trained, get empowered, and go out and be the change you wish to see in the church, because I have an online school and it's really, really affordable. All you have to do is go to thestorychurchproject.com and under the training tab, click on online school. And there you're going to be invited to join an online school called The Mission Collective. On this online school, there are already over 30 videos exploring topics like mission, theology, engaging postmoderns, sharing the gospel with emerging generations who've never been to church, articulating the gospel for the technological shifts that are coming in the next 10 to 20 years, and even training sessions on how you, without a degree, without any money, can start your own missional community, building the kingdom of God in your city. And the only thing you need for it to work is the fire of mission burning in your bones. So if you are tired of just talking about change and longing for change and dreaming for change in the church, and you want to be part of the change, head over to thestorychurchproject.com. On the training tab, click the online school link, and all the instructions are there. Just look around, you guys. The world is imploding on itself. The time for talk has finished. The time for I wish has finished. It's time for a new generation to get to work building the kingdom of God.
You know, when you talked about that, it reminds me of the community I'm trying to build here now. It's the same whole concept. It's amazing because we have never met.
We've never talked about this stuff. That's right. Yeah.
So it's either, you know, it's from the devil, or it's really inspired. And so we try to gather up young people, and I said, man, we're going to get rid of the programs. And again, the same dilemma as you said, I have enough followers to just ask people to come and we'll make something new, you know, and maybe get more income. And I'm like, I don't think it's sustainable. I don't think we're going to just start something the same with different cosmetics, what you say. And so we started, you know what, we're going to get rid of the speaker program. We're just going to eat in Sabbath. We're just over tables. And I realized that this concept is what I've said with the homeless ministry that I've been doing is the most effective thing to do. It's just sit down with people and don't see them as a project, but just see them as people. And regardless of how they react, what you believe, just stay there. Just listen. And the problem with what you're doing and what we're doing is not sexy to reports churches. It's not sexy. It's not like, wow, 2 weeks and we have how many baptisms?
Yeah.
You know? And so we decide we go in slow, small, and mine is relatively super new. And we decided we can't just be doing programs on Sabbath. You know, and what we do is very simple, bro. Again, we're still just growing, we're still navigating on that stuff. What we do is just we have an icebreaker card and one that has levels to it, like level one, level two, level three, and that's like super intimate. We just have the cards in the morning and we'll just talk about those questions. Like, what's the most significant thing that happened in your life, or what's the decision that's affected your life and all that. So people get to open up, and we realize, no, I think we should add more wins and challenges. What's your wins and challenges this week? Everyone gets to share. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine who's an elder church opened up and said, man, I've been struggling with depression and I have not, like, you know, and I was like, and I start to see this is what church looks like. Because that elder from the church definitely cannot open that at church. In the traditional sense. Mm. What? You're an elder. What do you mean? You know, so, but here he gets to open up because it's so intimate and small. And so we start all these men in Sabbath, and I tell you the truth, out of my how many years in ministry, I've never looked forward to a Sabbath like this in my life.
Yeah.
Because it's so authentic. And I've seen this, bro. You know what I've realized? I realized we've been doing this for years. I realized my best church Sabbath is when we do camping over fire and we just express ourselves in there. And I was like, wait, what? And I realized this is where the system comes in, where it's so oppressive to authenticity and just the authentic feeling of church is taken out because we're now sandwiched into a program day, an event-based church.
Mm.
And I tell you, bro, I've never opened this up in social media because I know a lot of Seventh-day Adventists will come and we're just going to be another program. But that's not the goal.
Absolutely.
But it's not enough. And this is what you're saying. It's not enough. We decided, you know what? We're going to have nights, boys' night out at every Wednesday, Monday or Tuesday. And where boys get to say things about, you know, their problems without their wives. And wives, they can have their own time where they can manicure and pedicures and all that on Tuesdays. And some of them are church people, you know? So we can just do life with them. It's like, and we're not going to put a template to it. You do your thing as girls, you go. But the whole assignment is to connect, just to live life with people and not seeing them as projects. And for me, every day I go to the gym for my jiu-jitsu and I get to connect with people. I've never seen life like this. And I've realized this year. My life has been following a template that takes out the authentic human experience.
That's right.
That's what I realized.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? And my wife wasn't raised in church. My wife, Candace, secular, Aussie as well. Her grandmother is an Adventist, and her mother would sometimes go, you know, in and out. So she was familiar with the church and thing much more than most secular Aussies are, but she wasn't raised in that culture. And she said to me one day, and it made a lot of sense. She said, you know what I find the biggest struggle with fitting in at church? This was before we church planted. She said, it just really feels like everyone here lives off of a script.
Yeah, a template. Yeah.
We all have a template.
Ooh, my goodness.
And everyone is aligned with the script. And I remember talking to a lady one time, because I learned this after 10 years of pastoring. Let me tell you, man, you see things. You see things, bro. And if you're not careful, you'll get jaded. But I remember a lady talked to me one time. She was really struggling because she was struggling to fit into the template, basically. So she called me, I believe it was a Tuesday morning. And she said, hey, man, I'm really struggling with, you know, I just struggling to fit in. And her partner at the time, her boyfriend was, he was a secular guy. She had a background in the church, but he didn't. And she was just really struggling and she was worried about him because, you know, she didn't want to bring him into that environment. And I remember having to just be really honest with her and say, look, I'll tell you what the truth is from my years of experience as a pastor. Every church has a template, a script that you have to comply with. And you have to comply with that script in order to fit in. But here's the truth, I said. No one matches the script. Not a single person. The people who fit in are the ones who get really good at pretending to match the script. And anyone who has a semblance of authenticity and is not interested in pretending, you just never fit in. But no one matches the script, man. It's just how good are you at faking it? That's really what it boils down to. And I had people, you know, elders, big time leaders in the church who were very sanctimonious to your face. And as a pastor, you see things, man. And I would see things behind the scenes, you know, wow, you know, and it's like nobody matches this so-called script of holiness. It's just like if you're really good at faking it, you become one of the insiders that, you know, gains influence and power. But most people, especially today, younger generations, they're not interested in that. They don't want to play that game. And so they just feel like they never fit in. And this is one of the things I love about missional community is that you're not just removing building. You're not just removing program. You're removing script. You're like, we're going to be human here together. We're going to be vulnerable. We're going to get rid of the template, the God voice, you know, like the God voice that churches have, like every preacher has to use the God voice, you know, it's like, if you say these words in this way, in this tone, you're somehow holy. Like, just get rid of that, man. And like, just be authentic, raw humans together. People who are all searching for truth, searching for Jesus. And we can all meet together at that place, because whether you've been in church your whole life, like myself with a theology degree, or you're a brand new person who's never even been to church before, we're both searching for the same thing. And we can do that together as human beings, you know? But this whole idea, I wanted to go back to this question that you asked earlier as well. Because people say this to me all the time. They're like, oh, but Jesus went to the synagogue, you know?
And you touched that in your chapter here.
Yeah. And I talk about that in a lot more detail in the book. So I don't want to spend too much time on it now.
Yeah,
but here's
please,
the thing. There's two things that I thought, because in chapter two, my focus is the church is not a building. And so here's the thing I will say very quickly. And if you want more details, you can read it in the book. The synagogue and the church are not the same thing. Not even close, you guys. Church is a mystery that
apostasy
hidden in his heart for thousands of generations. The synagogue is a community center that a Jewish community center that popped up during the intertestamental period. And it was a community center where they would read scripture, and it was also a civic center where they would discuss, you know, civil matters for their region.
Civil matters, yeah.
The synagogue is not the church, you guys. Of course Jesus went to a synagogue. Jesus was Jew, right? Like, why wouldn't he go to a synagogue, you know? It's like, come on. But the synagogue and the church are not the same thing. And I would go even, and I talk about this in the chapter as well, the Solomonic Temple, the post-exilic temple, those big buildings that were built in Israel, that's not the same thing as the church either, man. You know, like, it's just, yeah, like, if I go into it now, this will turn into a big Bible study, but the church is this insane phenomenon that is so big that God has been, even though Paul says God has kept it hidden in his heart, there's a sense in which is already revealed in the Old Testament. You find it all the way back in Abram, and it works its way. It strings its way through the chaos of, you know, all of the sort of butterfly effect of people's decisions. It strings its way through, and then Jesus and the Spirit are like, when Jesus resurrects and the Spirit is poured out, that's when, boom, the mystery finally reaches its full articulation. And it's not a synagogue, man. It's not. So I'll, you know, so that, and here's the thing. All throughout the New Testament, this is another point I make in the second chapter, all throughout the New Testament, you repeatedly see the church being mentioned. Not once in the whole New Testament, not once is the church referred to as a building. Not one time, right? There's a few texts, for example, where it talks, in Peter, where he talks about the house of God. But the house of God in Peter isn't a literal building. He's using it as a metaphor for the people, that the people are the house of God. And there's this other text, I don't remember exactly where it is now, but where Paul talks about how God is building his church with stones, but the stones that he's using to build the church are living stones, right? They're not physical stones. They're living stones. They're the people, right?
We're the foundation.
We are the brick, right? We are the stones of the building. And then the chief cornerstone is Jesus, right? So all throughout the New Testament, there's just no conflation whatsoever with the New Testament and the church. And some people will say, oh, but the church met in homes and the home's a building. It's like, dude, please, like, it doesn't take a whole lot of emotional energy to think about that statement and realize there's a big difference between someone's home and the buildings we have now. Massive difference. Like, I don't even want to comment on it. Like, just go think about it, right? Like, there's a huge difference. And so the church in the New Testament, ecclesia is the word that's used, the Greek word that's used for church. And ecclesia literally just means an assembly, a group of people, called out ones. That's what the word means. It has no inkling whatsoever to a permanent building or a permanent structure. The church is not a building, like, bottom line. But it's more than not a building. Because I remember I had one person say to me, oh, but, you know, it's because the early Christians, they couldn't do it. But if they could, I'm sure they would build buildings like we do today. It's like, no, the New Testament church isn't simply not a building. It's running in the opposite direction. It is the first. This is the radical thing about the New Testament church, right? For the first time in history, you have a movement, a spiritual movement that does not have any sacred buildings, because the Spirit of God dwells in the people. It does not have any sacred priests because it's a priesthood of all believers. It does not have any sacred people, like individual people, because all the people are sacred. It doesn't have any saints, right? All the people are saints. Like this is insane. Like you've never seen this before. Every religion, every spiritual community throughout history has sacred sites, sacred people, like special priests or something, or saints, and sacred icons. The church in the New Testament is the first time in history that you see a movement that is deeply religious and deeply spiritual. It doesn't have a sacred location. It doesn't have special saints. It doesn't have special priests, because the people are the church. The people are the priests. The people are the saints, all under the lordship of Christ. This is radical. This is unheard of. It's never happened before, right? And so when we say things like the church is a building and, you know, the synagogue and the temple, like we literally are losing, through this bad theology, we are blinding ourselves to the radical thing that God is doing that has never been seen before. And that's what I explore in chapter 2.
Hey guys, one quick announcement before the episode wraps up. At the end of this series, we are going to record a special Q&A episode. So if you have questions that you want us to answer in our Q&A episode, I want you to email them to Pastor Marcos@thestorychurchproject.com. Email all your questions from this podcast series there, and we will answer them in our final episode.